in a different form than they did in the past, because they need to be connected to indigenous people, to traditions, for people's respect for religion and tradition and so on, all kinds of things that were cast away by the left, unfortunately, in the 60s and the 70s of the last century. So there is a way of creating a different kind of, a different essence of politics that has to include a different version of economic and social justice compared to what capitalists are offering us.
Which is a huge challenge.
Absolutely.
Because it's not just changing one country, two countries, it's changing an entire ecosystem that's been developed over the past.
Well, we need intersectionality. All these struggles, I mean, all these struggles need intersectionality. They need to be united. They cannot be localized. They have to be globalized. Because also the local balance of power is usually against the minority, the oppressed, and so on. So the only way to empower it is by globalizing it.
So conscious of our time, and I know we've only got a couple of minutes, but what I do really want to ask you is the fifth crack you identify is the Israeli army invincible. So after decades of projecting this invincibility, how has the IDF actually performed in Gaza, Lebanon, and of course with Iran? Is this a myth that's now being challenged?
Well, a little bit it is. You have to remember, the Israeli army was very successful on three accounts. When the war was short, when it was fought on the other side's territory, and when Israel initiated the war. All these three elements were not there on the 7th of October. And it seemed that when you are engaged in a long war that at first is being fought on your own soil, and you are not the one who initiated it, that even vis-a-vis a small guerrilla army like Hamas, you find it very difficult to win. Imagine what would have happened if Hezbollah would have joined forces with Hamas on the 7th of October. We don't know how it would unfold. And we definitely don't know how this army would be able to deal with conventional armies should the attitude of Arab neighbors of Israel change. In other words, a message to the Israelis is that yes, you have huge air power, which works very well against the ghetto of Gaza. And maybe also against Iran with the help of the American Air Force. But eventually you have to think about conventional wars that are not only won by Air Force and so on. And most important with anything, and with this I would end because I think that's the most important thing that I'm saying for me, that I want to say in the book. The message even of the opposition in Israel, not just the government, is that the next 50 years would be the same. You have to fight all the time, and you have to win all the time. This is a terrible message, which explains why anyone in Israel who has the ability to leave is leaving. Because, it's in terms of statistics, it's quite possible that you won't win all the time. And they already got a taste for one day of not winning. I think that I do hope, I'm still hopeful about it, that maybe it's a post-traumatic reaction, that at least a more significant number of Israeli Jews would learn the right lesson from the 7th of October, which is you can't do it through violence, you can't win through wars, the army is not the vehicle for the survival of a society. And you're lucky, because I do believe that the basic impulse of the Palestinians is to share the land with you peacefully. Unfortunately, your basic impulse as an ideological society is to replace the Palestinians. And until they don't change this perspective, they are risking not only the lives of the Palestinians, but also their own life in the future.
Absolutely. On that note, Ilan, I know our time's out.
Sorry about that.
Thank you very much. This was,
thank you.
Not
thank
at
you.
All. I thoroughly okay. enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRI Jewish Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the Akhlaq of Martyrs. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to HZ here on I'm Being Shredi with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously when I talk about the Akhlaq of Martyrs, well, all our episodes really are about learning, in a sense, or sort of strengthening our akhlaq, I would say, through some of the beautiful examples we see in the martyrs' lives. Because we know that the martyrs have particularly pure hearts, really were very much on the path, the sort of path of purifying themselves, and displayed very beautiful traits. So obviously it goes without saying that good akhlaq and martyrs go together. So just give an example of one of our martyrs, but obviously any of the martyrs would suffice for this. So for example, Ibrahim Hadi, one of the famous martyrs from Holy Defense, was described as, basically, he was beautiful. Oh, everyone who met him considered him beautiful. Now, this is because, obviously, the pure-hearted people do have a special light that is visible to others. And there's this tendency of people, no matter how bad the other people's akhlaq is or their background or the way they dress, people sort of are attracted to these good people. And we know that Allah, for sure, and we are taught this, that Allah places the love of the special people in our hearts. So we're all going to be drawn towards these people, towards the martyrs anyway. So just as an example, Ibrahim Hadi was described as very kind, very polite, and he had great morals and good manners. Now, so what does that mean? So what can we do? And obviously, as I talk about the martyrs again and again, I would urge all of us, I include myself, if we haven't really been engaged in reading about the martyrs or watching movies about the martyrs, or even just watching little clips on social media when you find them, this is something we need to do. We need to engage a lot more with the martyrs. Welcome back to HZ here on I'm Being Shredi with me, Sister Zainab. And I'm talking about akhlaq, of course. I'm talking about the akhlaq of the martyrs in particular. And I've just started to sort of give a reminder, urge all of us to just become even more engaged with the martyrs, because obviously you're probably well aware that obviously our times throughout the world now are very unusual times. And you know, one of the things we can do, if we are aware that, you know, there's so much oppression happening in the world, there's so much cruelty, there's so much violence. Well, rather than fall into a despairing attitude, what we should be doing is strengthening ourselves, strengthening our hearts, improving our akhlaq. Because for sure, this is something that's beneficial for us. We gain greater proximity to Allah, and inshallah, we sort of stay on this path towards Allah anyway. But also, it helps the people around us, because we do need these pure-hearted people. So whether it's our martyrs who are with us, they're certainly not dead, they're truly alive now. Or whether it's our people in our daily lives, so whether if we have really good role models, if, for example, one of our parents or another family member is just a very good, non-judgmental, a very patient and calm person who may be someone that we always go to when we have questions. So let's sort of be directed more towards them to sort of benefit from that. Because, you know, there's the other thing, and this is something that the martyrs, all of them did. When we sort of get closer to the pure-hearted people, the good people, their traits, in a sense, rub off on us. We benefit. So we will then find that our habits improve, our akhlaq improves, because, you know, we even unconsciously, we will start to sort of imitate their words, their way of behavior, and we will adopt their values. If we ourselves do not have the best values yet, then for sure we will probably start to adopt the values, all those good values of the good people. So inshallah, this is just, let's say, a reminder to also make sure whether we're really spending enough time with all the good people we know. And nowadays especially, it's becoming more and more important, inshallah. So that was it for today, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of AZ here on Arabic Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.aranradio.ir.
I'm a warrior. This is Iran Radio, and I invite you to listen to some interesting facts about Islam. Islam does not have an ordained clergy or representatives of a church hierarchy in the way that Christianity does. However, every mosque has an imam, or the one who stands in front to prayer and deliver the sermon. Jesus is an important figure in the Holy Quran. Like Christians, Muslims believe in the virginal conception of Jesus by God's Spirit. However, Muslims do not believe Jesus is the Son of God. For Muslims, the concept of the Holy Trinity represents a form of polytheism. And the continuation of our schedule on Iran Radio. I'm so glad you've joined us. Ahead lies a schedule full of compelling discussions, stirring stories and perspectives that challenge and uplift. First, we bring you Israel Watch. After this program, we have another segment of radio productions. Following this, we will shed light with the lantern. For now, please stay tuned for Israel Watch.
Thank you for joining us. Hebrew media shed light on the interview conducted by an Israeli newspaper with Tom Barak and the complexities of forming the international force in the Gaza Strip. Other topics included the prospects of escalation against Lebanon. We will discuss these topics with Mr. Khaled Barakat, writer and political researcher, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Mr. Khaled.
Thank you, Barak.
Tel Aviv is expressing strong opposition to the participation of Turkish troops in the international force that is to be deployed in Gaza as per U.S. President Donald Trump's plan, which has caused tensions between the entity and the Trump administration. Could this issue cause a major crisis between U.S. and the Israelis?
I don't think it will cause major crisis. It's a tactical difference position between the U.S. Trump administration and the Netanyahu administration, because this is contradictions within the allies. It's not two camps fighting each other. Mm-hmm. It's the allies and the friends of the United States who are disputing what to divide and how to divide tasks between each other. Turks want, you know, the Turkey wants more, Israel wants more. They want to talk about, you know, if Turkey is going to be involved in Gaza, then how come they don't want us in Syria? And so, basically, this reflects a contradiction within the same camp, competing, not conflict in a major way, but at the same time, it reveals the absence of the Arabs.
So you're saying that Turkey is in the Western camp?
Absolutely. Turkey is a member of the NATO. Mm-hmm. NATO, you know, and at the same time, when we look at the relationship between Turkey and Israel, not Erdogan and Netanyahu.
Okay.
Turkey, the state, and Israel, the Zionist entity. We're talking about $5 to $6 billion, trade annually. We're talking about a very strategic agreement in military, intelligence, you name it. And both are friends and allies of the United States. Now, the U.S. administrations these days wants to tell the Israelis that you cannot play our role in the region. You have to come to Washington. That's why they tell Netanyahu, come to Washington. Mm-hmm. Because also, basically the boss is in Washington. And so if you guys disagree with each other, and, you know, we love you all, but you have to come to Washington so we can intervene and
sort to take the blessings
out. Absolutely. And because as Barak said, the problem is not these things between Israel and Turkey, the problem is Iran. Mm-hmm. So even when Iran has nothing to do with actually these kind of contradictions between Turkey and Israel, the United States would rather blame Iran even for these kind of contradictions.
Okay, but how important is this partnership with Turkey to the Trump administration?
I think that
because they are insisting and persisting that they should be part of this new phase.
I think the dispute between them is not just on Gaza. The real problem between Turkey and Israel is Syria, and Syria is the absent word here. The Turks wants to basically be the major force in Syria. Israel is occupying, you know, Syrian lands, not to mention the Golan Heights. And at the same time, they're not very comfortable with Israel bombing Syria.
Okay,
on a daily basis.
These are the disputes, but how important is it, is this partnership with Turkey to the Trump administration?
Well,
and you spoke about interest between the two sides.
It's very important. The relationship between U.S. and Turkey goes way back. And it is extremely important for the United States that Turkey be satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a major regional power in the region. Turkey is not a small country or a small power in the region, and the United States have depended on Turkey on so many issues and so many files before the, you know, the collapse of the Soviet Union and after the collapse of the Soviet Union, to the extent that you know, Turkey gets basically almost what Israel gets with some kind of
modifications,
and every time Turkey wants to.
So it's a true competition here.
Competition.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, U.S. envoy to Syria Tom Barrack discussed the issue of Turkey ties with the occupation entity in an interview with the Jerusalem Post.
If you pick up the Turkish papers in the morning, you look at the Greater Israel. They say the objective is Israel is going to go from Venice to Dubai. F-35 in Turkish hands is not a problem for Israel? Oh, I think it is a problem for Israel. I think Israel is deathly against it, but that's a ways off. Is there also a normalization path between Erdogan and Netanyahu that you see? I do. I'll be hung up in the Turkish press again tomorrow by saying it. Yes. Yes, it makes so much sense. There's only one real problem, which is Iran. The rest are not problems.
Why does Israel appear to be concerned with Turkey playing an enhanced regional role?
Because, again, Israel wants to dominate. Israel feels that it has the surplus power and the U.S. support and the Western support that Turkey doesn't have in the same level. And they feel that this is a chance for them to dominate the region. And so when, you know, greater Israel for the Israelis does not mean to send Israeli, you know, occupation forces to, I mean, if they can, they will, but to Jordan and Iraq and Kuwait. And the idea is to dominate the region, to be the power that nothing happened without its consent and its approval. And Turkey feels that this is too much. And particularly
fight over influence in the region.
Influence, but at the same time, in the last 2 years, is not like before. After October 7th, the entire region rejects Israel. Israel is not a normal part of this region, and that's why it is important and is in the interest of Turkey and Iran, for example, to work together. It is important for the Arabs and Turkey and Iran to work together because they are natural, you know, part of our region. The problem is Israel, not Iran. And when Barrack said that we can solve these issues, but the problem is Iran, well, actually, we can solve these issues, but the problem is Israel.
So you're saying that Israel views Turkey as an obstacle in its Israeli in its hegemony towards the region, especially the expansionist plan of the Greater Israel.
Absolutely. I mean, when we look at the history, I mean, wars happen between sometimes, you know, same camp. World War One, for example, happened between European forces and capitalists. They're all capitalist. There is an intensifying moment in the region,
mm-hmm.
and Turkey feels that it can actually have a more influence than Israel, being, you know, seeing that Israel is isolated today in the world.
So they can take advantage of that?
Yes.
Okay, however, do you think that Washington is in the process of settling these dilemmas or some of the disputes between Turkey and Israel for the sake of the second phase of the Gaza Agreement?
At the expense of the Arabs.
They will do that.
They will solve the dispute between the two sides.
Yes, at the expense of the people of the region.
Will Turkey apply that? Will Turkey accept it?
I'm not sure if Turkey is going to go all the way with U.S. plans, because, again, Turkey understands that Trump is just a phase. And, you know, the relationship with Trump is excellent with Turkey. It's not like, have you ever seen Trump, you know, criticizing Israel? He always called Erdogan a very close friend, an ally, you know, special friend.
Yeah, but also at the same time, you're saying on the expense of the Arabs, but also Trump has good relationships with the Arabs. He just got trillions of dollars from Saudi Arabia.
Yes, I'm not talking about these Arab monarchist regimes and reactionary regimes.
Okay.
I'm talking about the Arab people. I'm talking about Syria and Lebanon and Palestine. I'm talking about our region here.
Okay.
It will be
neighboring countries.
Absolutely. And the people interest, the nation interest, not the government interest. The entire Arab regime today is submitting to U.S. I mean, I don't see any Arab state even willing to criticize the United States. I mean, you know, some Algerian ambassador criticized mildly the United States. He was gone. I mean, we're talking about Algeria, not like, you know, Saudi Arabia. So no one dares now to even talk or criticize the U.S. We are dealing with regimes that they have total submission to U.S. hegemony. They are rushing normalization with Israel. They are cooperating with Israel, especially the Gulf countries, on a daily basis, not just in terms of economy,
but
even security.
Yeah, but do you think that Barak actually indulged in such sensitive topics and shared it on public, especially on the Jerusalem Post, just to shed the light on one factor, that Iran is the problem? Because that's what they concluded from that interview.
Iran is the elephant in the room that they don't want to, but he is very frank and open, and he say it as is. And sometimes you need to hear it.
What did he mean to say that?
It just to blame someone else, you know, and to use Iran as a, you know, a name.
A pretext?
I say a cry crow or whatever they call that, you know, to just scare people, scare. And not just, you know, if Iran, for example, if he didn't use Iran, he could have said terrorism is the problem, or Hezbollah is the problem, or Hamas is the problem.
He deliberately mentioned it that way.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And he knows that he's doing this in order to remind the allies that you should be united against Iran. And they're failing to do that. They've been working day and night to build a coalition against Iran.
Yeah, obviously by shedding light on the Turkish role, especially the relationship between Turkey and Trump, is to like diverge the situation from Turkey as an enemy to Iran as an enemy. Do you agree to that scenario?
They never viewed
to Israel, of course.
They never viewed Turkey as an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Turkey is an ally.
Yes.
And if Turkey
to
was...
To the Israelis.
Absolutely.
To the Israelis, we're saying.
Again, it's a competition.
Because
like
the competition is intense between the two sides.
Yes, I mean, in Germany and France, they compete. Britain and, you know, Germany, they compete. And they actually, when you read, you know, like Canada and the U.S., they competed. They had a dispute, you know, over many things. But they're allies. No one would question that Canada is not an ally of the United States.
Okay, in the same interview with the Jerusalem Post, Barak referred to the ongoing contacts between the Netanyahu and Gilani administrations to reach an agreement between the two sides. How likely is that an agreement can actually occur between Gilani and Netanyahu?
What Netanyahu wants from Syria is a total submission. They want the new Syrian regime to come walking on their hands and legs to submit to Israeli conditions. And Israel is not willing to withdraw from one inch of the occupied Syrian territories or from the Golan Heights. And the regime in Syria today is experiencing a new challenges. One is that the people of Syria, regardless of how much you can deceive some, you know, people at certain point of time, they are really looking at this as a submission. And we hear more and more popular voices in Syria saying that we cannot accept Israeli aggression on our land. We cannot accept any kind of relationship with Israel based on Israel keeping, you know, the Israeli, the Syrian occupied land. And even in the ceremonies that they did on 1 year of the so-called victory, people spontaneously in the streets of Damascus were shouting against Israel, against occupation. They were shouting for Gaza and for the resistance. And I think that...
So an agreement is likely, in your opinion?
I don't think so. I don't.
But Jolani is not showing any lack of submission, as you're highlighting.
Absolutely, but they want more. Because
more, such as?
They want a total submission. They don't want to give
from the people of Syria?
No, from this regime in Syria. They don't want... Okay, if there is...
But they don't
notice,
show any...
Notice how they call it security
criticism.
Agreement. They're not calling it agreement. They're not calling it even peace agreement. They're calling it security agreement.
Yes.
Security agreements means that Israel will keep all the
troops.
Syrian land,
okay.
Including, you know, Jabal al-Sheikh. They're beginning, the Israelis, to call Syrian areas with Hebrew names. Basically, they're saying this is the mountain of Harmon. This is a sacred mountain about, you know, a Sheikh mountain, Jabal al-Sheikh. They're already advocating for this is the permanent status. And they want to keep the pressure.
Okay, so the total submission and not staying in those lands that they occupied, the Syrian lands. That's the kind of submission
yes,
that
well,
you're talking about.
According to Barak, this needs to have an arrangement. You know, he could say, for example, well, yeah, Israel withdraw from Syrian land like before.
Yes.
You know, the so-called peace for land era. We're not that era anymore, peace for land anymore. Today, what Barak and his, you know, administration wants is to impose new realities.
Okay.
Basically, Israelis will remain in Syria, and the Syrian regime have to submit.
Despite that factor, okay. An interesting statement made by Barak in this interview is that the Turkish, and he said that the Turkish intelligence assisted in intercepting Hezbollah convoys in Syria. First of all, how accurate do you think the statement is? And if it's true, can it be considered as a way to improve ties between Turkey and Israel?
I think that this will condemn Turkey's role in Syria. Is this Turkish role in Syria? Is to stop you know, any arms coming to the resistance, if we assume that this is correct and it's true. And if it's not true, then why they're not responding to him saying that?
Do you think
this
it's
is
true?
Not true?
Do you think it's actually happened?
Absolutely. These are allies.
Turkish intercepted Hezbollah convoy?
Yes, Farah, because when we talk about this relationship, it's not just media relationship or they have some kind of committee that they're talking with each other. We're talking about, you know, strategic agreements that between the United States and Turkey. Between the United States and you know these regional powers, and this is serious. This is committees who meet daily. This is defense stuff, intelligence, all kinds of you know relationship, and it's 24/7.
Okay, but by shedding light on this aspect, do you think the major reason here is to consider a way to improve the ties between the Israelis and the Turkey.
Yes,
even if you agree that the Turkish actually stopped this convoy.
Absolutely. He's trying to sell the Israelis that Turkey in Syria is good.
Okay.
Basically, that it's better for Israel if Turkey is in Syria, because that's what they're doing. They're stopping arms to reach Hezbollah.
Okay. Now to the occupied West Bank, where a senior officer in the occupation army warned of individual Palestinian attacks against Israeli forces and settlers, underscoring that this is an imminent danger that must be addressed. Why do you think the potential or the issue of a potential lone wolf Palestinian attack is being raised now?
Because they're trying to justify settlers' actions against Palestinian people. Settlers in the West Bank is basically militias, armed militias by the army and by the Israeli government, protected by the army. And the, I mean, the ones who are committing crimes against Palestinians. It's not just the Israeli army, but also these organized gangs and militias. And there are 12 organizations that they have almost 360,000 rifles by Ben-Gavir and by the government.
Supported.
Supported. Each Israeli settlement is basically a military camp. Each Israeli colony in the West Bank have a training ground, have weapons, and have even jails.
Yes.
Where sometimes they keep Palestinians for a few days and then they transfer them to the army.
Okay.
And so they're trying to justify the crimes of the settlers.
Our time is up. Thank you very much. Mr. Khaled Barakat, writer and political researcher, thank you.
What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Iran is known for its four-season climate and the climatic variety in each of its regions. This time, the lavender fields of North Khorasan province have invited us so that we could discover a part of natural beauties in northeastern Iran.
The land of a thousand colors, with a wild and vibrant nature, where kings and poets have been inspired by its beauties throughout the ages. A place where fountains keep the rivers flowing like the never-ending tales of Shahrazad in the 1,000 Nights and a Night.
From some of the most arid deserts in the world, the habitat of the Iranian cheetah, to the greenest forests, pastures, and valleys, North Khorasan has it all. Here at the Baba Aman Forest Park, the combination of rivers, waterfalls, and the umbrella of sycamore trees have all created one of the most popular summer hideouts for the people in the region.
There are a number of forest parks in North Khorasan, and Baba Aman is one of the popular ones. In spring and summer, Baba Aman hosts the largest number of visitors. At first sight, the place resembles an oasis. What greets you here upon your arrival is the cool, gentle breeze that touches your face. The symphony of the flowing river and the terraced ponds in the middle of the park complete this good feeling. But our trip to North Khorasan is not all about nature. In this amazing region of Iran, there is a little town which could be considered unique, at least in Iran and its surrounding countries. The exceptional feature of this place unveils itself after a short drive in the town's only boulevard.
We have come to a little town in northeast Iran, a town with only 12,000 inhabitants. What is interesting about it is that it has more than 170 shops that only sell dried nuts and dried snacks, such as kashk. It's a combination of dried curd and herbs and spices. Wow, it's kind of hard, but it's so tasty. Let's get inside and have a look.
Welcome to Faruj, the region's trade hub for dried nuts, trail mixes, and you name it.
One of the things that makes North Khorasan exceptionally beautiful is its untouched natural environment. Many believe that this region could be one of the main destinations for ecotourists in the near future. A few kilometers from the city of Shirvan, a village known as Gelian testifies to this fact.
We head towards a hidden paradise in Iran's northeast. Gelian, also known as Golian, is one of the 365 outstanding tourist villages of Iran. With a population of no more than 700, the inhabitants of this picturesque mountainous area are mainly engaged in farming and animal husbandry. Gelian is situated in a valley. The terraced structure of the village and its adobe buildings, along with very tall trees, are only some of the interesting features of this place. Some people believe that if you're born in Iran and spend an entire lifetime traveling across this country, you still wouldn't be able to see all the beauties of this ancient land. This may be true, but seeing at least a part of beautiful Iran would still be worth it. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Shines above. You're the reason I never give up. You're the one I try for. Live my life for. Give up all I have. You're the melody, you're the key, all the inspiration I need. And when times get tough, I know you'll stand by me. You are the love I need, the one who has got. And you know my destiny, for you are the light, and you are my life. Oh, 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 your words light up my heart. This connection I felt from the start.
Stories from the Past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brother and sister, salam. So, welcome to a new story. Yes, this is another episode of Lantern, and we have a new story entitled Mature in Intellect. Welcome to Lantern. With the intention of suppressing a group of rebellious enemies existing around Mecca and Medina, the noble prophet, peace be upon him and his family, readied a rapid strike command until, for the purpose of advancing secretly upon the enemies in the darkness of the night and overcoming them, and appointed a youth from the tribe of Hudayl as the commander of this unit. A shallow-minded person remonstrated, saying, "Why have you appointed a youth as our chief? We refuse to obey his orders. You ought to have appointed an elderly person as the chief and commander of the army." The noble prophet said, "O shallow-minded person, although he is a youth, nevertheless, he possesses a strong heart and a sound intellect, whereas the elders that you talk about, although they possess white beards and apparently should be given the leadership, however, their hearts are dark as pitch. On numerous occasions, I have put this youth to test and found him to be mature in intellect. Elderly in age, but lacking in intellect, yields no benefit. Strive to the maximum extent possible to be elderly in the intellect and religion, for leadership is determined not by age, but by intelligence, reflection, and a pure, luminous heart."
شكراً يا ربي شكراً هديت قلبي شكراً نورت دربي شكراً شكراً يا ربي شكراً يا ربي شكراً هديت قلبي شكراً نورت دربي شكراً شكراً يا منزل القرآن يا خالق الإنسان يا رب يا رحمن شكرا يا رب
شكرا يا رب
يا منزل القرآن يا خالق الإنسان يا رب يا رحمن شكرا يا
Now we'll listen to the continuation of this program, Lantern, and the important points of this nice story.
We seek refuge from Satan the cursed in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Lantern from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and in Lantern, what we do is to listen to a set of religious stories and then try to talk and explore some more points that we can take out of these stories and make use of them in our daily lives. Well, maturity is often imagined as something that arrives with age, as though the passing of years automatically sharpens insight and deepens character. Yet the reality of life, history, and revelation tells a different story. True maturity is not tied to the number of years that a person lives. It is tied to the clarity of their intellect, the depth of their understanding, and the sincerity of their hearts. In the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, intellect is the basis of value. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, قَيْمَةُ كُلِّ مْرَئِي مَا يُحْسِنُهُ. The worth of every person is in what they excel in. meaning the excellence of their understanding and reason, not their age or appearance. In another narration, he states that Al-Aqlu Rasulul Haqq, intellect is the messenger of truth. These words shift the discussion entirely. Maturity is measured by the strength of one's inner compass, not by the length of one's lifespan. The Holy Book of Quran also points to the same truth. In Surah Al-Zumar, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم هل يستوي الذين يعلمون والذين لا يعلمون Are those who know equal to those who do not know? Verse 9 of Surah Al-Zumar. This is not a question about age. It is a question about awareness. Who reflects? Who understands? Who acts based on insight? Knowledge, not age, is what separates maturity from immaturity. And in another verse, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala describes the people of understanding as those who remember their Lord, standing, sitting, and lying down, and those who reflect on the creation of the heavens and the earth. This refers to Surah Al-Imran, verse number 191. This reflection, this internal movement of thought, is the essence of maturity. People who take time to examine themselves, question their motives, and understand the consequences of their actions grow intellectually and spiritually, regardless of whether they are young or old. Maturity, so, is not something one inherits. It is something that one builds. The Imams teach that the intellect grows when a person practices restraint, humility, and sincerity. Many people grow older but never allow themselves to think deeply enough to truly change. Their age increases, but their maturity remains fixed at the level where they stopped reflecting. Okay, well, let's go have a short break and we will be back in no time.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Welcome back to your audience. You're listening to Lantern and we are talking about maturity and its requirement, which is not, definitely not, old age. Well, maturity shows itself in the way a person handles responsibility. One may find a young individual who takes responsibility for their actions, the one who admits mistakes and sees improvement. And one may find an older adult who blames others, who avoids accountability, and who repeats the same behaviors endlessly. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam says, "Man ta'aqqal a'tabar, wa man i'tabara absar." Whoever uses their intellect will take lessons, and whoever takes lessons will see clearly. The chain is simple. Thinking leads to insight, and insight leads to clarity. Now, let's remember that a young person with understanding may be more mature than an elder without it. And an elder with a humble, reflective heart may surpass the young person in clarity and wisdom. What matters is not when we were born, but how we chose to think, how we chose to live, and how we chose to grow. Okay, well, dear listeners, it seems that our time for this episode of Lantern has come to its end. I really hope that you have enjoyed listening to us. And until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Dear brother and sister, thank you very much for your company. This is the end of this episode of Lantern. Until a new story, fi aman Allah.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
This is Iran Radio, which invites you to listen to some interesting facts about Islam. To become Muslim, a person of any race or culture must say a simple statement, a shahada, which bears witness to the belief in the singularity of Allah and in Muhammad as his messenger and prophet. The Holy Quran states that there is to be no compulsion in religion and that Allah has created not one, but many nations and peoples. Greetings from the capital, Tehran. You're listening to Iran Radio, and today's program are built to enrich the soul and awaken the mind. So lean in, listen closely, and let the stories speak to you. For this hour, our focus turns to round the world with reporters. Then it's time for profound guidance with leaders' speech. After that, we'll have spotlight. Stay tuned for round the world with reporters.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Erubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
For many Syrians, Israel's latest remarks reinforce a belief that the threat extends far beyond Syria's borders. The statement is widely viewed as an open declaration of hostility toward the region, rather than mere political rhetoric.
This entity threatens the entire Arab world, not just Syria or Palestine. We aren't afraid, but there must be a broader popular response, especially by Arabs. Sadly, people's reactions remain slow, while some governments align with Israel.
Syrians also connect these statements to recent Israeli incursions in the south, including the attack on Beit Jinn. Many view these events as early indicators of a dangerous shift that may eventually demand decisive action.
This regime won't stop at Palestine. It wants full control of the region in order to